You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Luis Sainz, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today are Oscar Mesa. He is with the Texas A&M Forest Service, and also John White. John is no stranger to KTUP, and neither is Oscar, actually. But they're here to talk about, if you've noticed, the weather's getting really nice out there. And some of you are probably already visiting some of the local nurseries and trying to decide what you're going to put in your front yard or your backyard. But the guys here, these experts, are here to tell us whether it's the time to do it or if you're going to be sorry and said, I could have been a container. Welcome, guys.
Welcome. Thank you, Louie.
All right. Well, as I mentioned, first of all, the weather has been nice, but in El Paso, as you've mentioned before, John, it's hit and miss because one week it'll be really nice and then all of a sudden we can get a freeze.
Yeah, I've got to kind of fall back a little bit on historical data, and I'm saying that we aren't out of the woods yet. So we still have a chance of a late freeze coming in. You know, everything's been real nice, and I've been surprised how plants in the garden are way ahead of time, and you know, things are really looking good, but we still got, you know, about 3 weeks before the last frost date. So
now a lot of the nurseries, as I mentioned at the beginning, already have some of their things out on display, and some people want to be the early bird and get out there and start. They're itching to go out and garden because a lot of people love to garden, and you guys host the Master Gardener programs, you know, both schools. And we're going to talk to Oscar in just a minute here. But what about that, John? Should people just go ahead and wait, or what, can they do a little bit of it?
What I tell them is you can go ahead with some stuff and just be prepared for a possible night where temperatures may dip. So have blankets or some kind of frost protection just in case for that one time. Hopefully it doesn't happen, but we're looking at historical averages, and our average last frost date is built on fed snows in May. And so, you know, there's things that can happen. So I like to be a little bit on the cautious side. So I tell people be a little careful, but buying tomatoes and stuff, you know, not super expensive. Put them in the ground, go ahead and get a start on them, get them protected, and then again watch the weather and if there is going to be a cold spell coming in that night, because you know it doesn't have to freeze, just gets down low and it can cause a tomato to kick its blooms off or you know slow the growth on it. So you still like to keep it protected.
As far as indoor plants, the people like to, it's nice to take them out and let them get some sunlight. Now, do they have to worry about as far as too much sunlight or not enough because it's been winter?
If they've been inside in kind of a somewhat of a dark situation and then you're putting them out in a full sun location, yeah, they will go through a little bit of a shock. So you need to do a little hardening off, because inside they've been in a house at, you know, 65, 70 degrees, and then you're taking them outside where, you know, temperatures can be 39, 42, 45, and then warm up to 70, so they can still be hit by cold weather, not to kill them, but it just puts them in shock because they've been sitting in a 65, 70, 75-degree house, so it is a shock. And so hardening off is bringing them out for a little bit, and then, you know, bringing them back in, bring them out in the sun, put them in the shade, and kind of do that for a couple of weeks, and then they'll get adjusted to sunlight and temperature, and then just, again, watch out for that real severe late spring freeze that we're prone to here.
And as I mentioned, Oscar Mesa has also joined us. Oscar is with the Texas A&M Forest Service. And Oscar, some people may wonder, well, wait a minute, here we are talking about spring planting, and here's somebody from the Forest Service, and when a lot of people think of the Forest Service, they either think of camping or Christmas trees.
Yes, they do, especially because they're thinking of the federal agency. We're not the federal agency. We're the state agency for Texas. And so our presence is throughout the whole state, and I'm the West Texas representative, and I've been out here 20-some years.
Oscar loves this question. Where's the forest?
It's look out your window, and if you see it more than two trees, that's our urban forest, because that's what I deal with, is the urban and community forestry issues.
So tell us about this tree study that you were talking about earlier before we started the taping.
The New Mexico Department of Forestry, the State Forestry Agency, and the Arizona Department of Forestry and Texas A&M Forest Service got together and received a federal grant from the U.S. Forest Service for Regions 3 and 8 to do a urban ecosystem study for four southwestern cities because it's never been done before. These studies have always been done in the East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, or every place but the Southwest. And we did it in Phoenix, El Paso, Las Cruces, and Albuquerque. And what we did is we hired crews to come out, and we did 200 random plots in each city and collect data in each plot. And the information we got back was basically a snapshot of the city, the number of trees, estimated number of trees, how much pollution is removed, the estimated age. And so we've got that information now. We've got some preliminary data out, and the final report should hopefully be out by the end of March.
Now, as far as the data itself and how it was collected, how was that collected? Was it did you have a bunch of people going out and taking samples of trees or air?
Correct. We hired a professional organization, Davy Resource Group. They're a national company that goes out and collects data and manages trees. So we hired them to do the data collection for the iTree Eco Study, which is a U.S. Forest Service software. And they do a 1/10 acre plot, which is 37.2 feet in radius. And they count the trees. They look at the size of the tree, the health of the tree, how much is the tree shading a building, if there's a building nearby, the distance to the building, how much impervious layer there is, how much open area there is. And then they throw that all the information into a computer, and you get out things like some of the preliminary data we have for El Paso is we have an estimated 1,500,000 trees for El Paso. And that's covering 256 square miles of the city limits because we only did the sample size within the city limits. And so when you're looking at that, estimated canopy size for El Paso is 5.9%. In desert cities, it's nice to have about a 10% canopy cover because the more canopy cover, the more air pollution and the benefits you get from the trees. But, you know, we got things like it said there's about 403 tons of pollution removed from El Paso annually, and that's about a $294,000 a year benefit that we get from our trees, just our city trees here in El Paso. So when you're looking at things like carbon, you know, people are worried about like carbon storage and carbon sequestration and other pollutants. The preliminary data show that the sequestration, which is the annual removal of carbon for El Paso, is like 8,460 tons a year, which is valued at about $602,000 per year. So people always see these trees out there, and they think of them just as providing shade, a little bit of, you know, but they don't think of the whole environmental benefit. So we'll have more data to show how much energy savings we're going to get from these trees, how much stormwater runoff, you know, is diverted from going into our streets from the trees. So we'll have that data coming out hopefully in March. And I'm hoping that the City of El Paso website will put it up on there. Webpage for people to access and look at.
And you're talking about all trees, right? Not just a certain type of tree.
Correct. It's a sample study. So wherever the plots landed, they counted with the type of tree there. So for instance, for El Paso, the top three trees that they found here in El Paso, the number one tree planted was Italian cypress, which really wasn't a surprise to me because we did a study back in 89 and showed Italian cypress was the number one planted tree in El Paso. And then the next one was Afghan pine, and then the following was a palm tree. So those are the three top trees planted in El Paso right now. But we'll have more data and breakdown of species as the report comes out.
Is the Italian cypress the one that people refer to as cemetery tree?
Yes, the tall, skinny one. So it doesn't provide a lot of shade, but it's still a tree, and it still captures dust and particles.
They're known as sparrow hotels.
Sparrow hotels.
Yeah, okay. Sparrows love to make nests in them.
And that sounds like a good name for a hotel, by the way, John.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in
that's right.
After you retire.
I'll coin that. I'll get a copyright on that name.
There you go. Now, tell us, as far as, since Oscar was talking about trees, what about people who have trees planted in their yards? And what about protecting them from freezes or anything like that?
Well, yeah, most of the trees that are planted in yards here in El Paso are cold tolerant enough that they, if we have a severe cold, of course there can be some damage done, but most of the light freezes and stuff, our plants will handle that. If you have a fruit tree that's been in bloom and probably already starting to set fruit, that will be damaged if we do drop down below freezing. A lot of it depends on how far below freezing we go, how long it stays there. But fruit trees are typically hit by late spring frost because they bloom so early. So, yes, you can have some damage on those. Now, the amount of material that's starting to come out and blooming and growing, If we did dip down into the mid-low 20s, we'd have some severe damage on a lot of plants just because of the growth factor, how much succulent growth is already on the plant. But typically a light freeze will kill some blooms and stuff, knock some fruit off, but it doesn't kill the plant.
One of the things that we haven't talked about, and we haven't, fortunately we haven't had as many, but last year they continued through May and June, and those are the winds, especially the dust storms.
Right. The winds can be pretty destructive. Oscar talks about pruning on trees, and pruning is very important because proper pruning your tree can take the sway and the movement of the winds and not be damaged. Improperly pruned, you can get your branches to where they catch in the wind and they snap because you've got them overloaded and got too much weight on ends, things like that. So proper pruning's important. There's certain trees that are more susceptible to wind damage. Those need to be planted in more protected areas and have your stronger trees as the main focus, and maybe your weaker wooded or weaker branch trees kind of as a understory or as a side tree so that it doesn't catch the brunt of the wind.
Oscar did mention the third tree as a palm tree, and I assume he's talking about the big, tall palm trees. But a lot of people here in El Paso, because of desert landscaping and xeriscaping, they also have the, is it the Mexican palm?
The Mexican fan palm.
Little one?
And that one is the one that probably had the most damage in our freeze of 2011. And that one is kind of borderline cold hardy in our area. El Paso being in its southern lower elevation, we can get by growing a lot of these borderline cold hardy plants here. Whereas you go a little further north, Las Cruces, we're a little higher in elevation, a little colder, and you see more damage on them there. There are some palms that are more cold tolerant, like there's the Mexican fan palm is Washingtonia robusta. The California fan palm is Washingtonia foliifera. It's a fatter palm tree, but more cold tolerant than the Mexican fan palm. But people like those skinny, tall palms, and that's fine. But sometimes the palm, if you have a palm that's 60, 80 feet tall, and you got a one-story house, it makes your house look awful small. So size, you got to think about, the scale and everything. But we have a windmill palm, which is very cold tolerant. It's a smaller palm, but can be used in the landscape and stuff. And then we have some of our palm-like plants, some of our arborescent yuccas that are somewhat like palms. They're more cold tolerant if you're using our native species. And they'll get, some height to them, not 60, 80 feet, but those are pretty good-sized palms. But we've seen a lot of palms put in the last 10, 15 years, and 2011 helped thin some of those out. And so, and it's funny, some people went back and planted the same species right back in again, so they're going to be in trouble again when we have another freeze come through, a big, heavy cold spell.
Perhaps, I guess, I don't know if I should ask you or Oscar this or both of you, but if people who, they live on the west side, they've been driving, down Mesa, they can see that a lot of the, I guess, the ocotillos and some of those plants have been chopped down. Is there a reason for that?
On Mesa Street?
Ocotillos should never be chopped. If there's a limb that's broken on them, usually you take it all the way to the base where it comes out. Because if you lop it off halfway up or so, what it does is sometimes it'll put out some sprouts that grow off sideways, and you lose the whole structure to the plant. So ocotillo should never be topped.
So, and so am I wrong in pointing out the...
No, was it no, that's correct. If it's done on a city street, then as a taxpayer, you should be calling streets department and telling them that, hey, you're wasting our taxpayer money.
Now, if somebody is pruning or getting ready to prune, Oscar, and we have about a minute left here, some people, as John said, don't really know what they're doing. I wouldn't know what to do. I would just start, I guess I should cut this one. I should cut this one. But there's certain things that you have to be careful with, especially if you're waiting for that freeze or whatever.
Correct. And John pointed it out earlier. The less you take out, the better. And for most people, if you don't know what to take out things that are dead and damaged, and that's it, and leave everything else alone. Because the more you leave on the tree, the healthier the tree is going to be, because that's what provides food for the tree.
Who prunes a tree in the forest?
Smokey the Bear.
Yeah, Smokey the Bear.
They naturally shed. So, yeah, hire an arborist, an ISA, International Society of Arboriculture. An ISA certified arborist is somebody who takes on continuing education and keeps up with the latest and greatest information. So I would go with someone like that first, and then, or just someone who's very, very knowledgeable. Ask lots of questions. There's a great website for consumers, treesaregood.com. It's all one word, treesaregood.com, and they have great consumer bulletins on anything about tree care.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been joined by Oscar Mesa. Oscar is with Texas A&M Forest Service, and also John White, who is with the Chihuahuan Desert Garden right across the street from the KTEP studios. Thank you all very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Lou.
Thank you.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTEP studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.